I wish I could not have a mailbox. It's currently now the one place I don't have actual control over. Everything else I can just decide not to deal with. But but we have the front slot. Mm-hmm. So there's suddenly there's just trash.
Just a pile. Of
people like, can here. Just put trash right into my house.
Here, throw this away.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 102 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm very sleepy.
I'm Sam, and I have a cold.
And today is June 13th, 2017.
Yes, it is the 13th of June.
Yes. And we have a warning before we get started. Anything could happen on this show. We will be sort of lacing our conversation with just little spurts of profanities.
Mm-hmm. But also some actual lace.
There's going to be lace, and there's going to be occasionally real human words kind of mixed in throughout. Mm-hmm.
Very occasionally.
So if you're against those kinds of things, whatever we just said, then you should get out.
Okay, cool.
If you're a baby or a child, get out of here. All right, guys, what happened this week? We have, so E3 is happening.
E3 is happening.
There's some big announcements, which I think these are the things we've all been waiting for.
Okay.
Yeah.
First thing, Minecraft. It's in 4K resolution. All right.
Since I was, because I read, you know, I was reading through the news yesterday and kind of briefing the team on what's been going on at E3. And I read this announcement first.
Minecraft
is in 4K.
You're going to see those giant pixels.
Yeah. And I thought,
so good.
I thought, am I insane?
Am I taking crazy pills?
Why is this important? Why is this even happening? Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next one I read was Microsoft's renaming of the Xbox Scorpio, which frankly was pretty cool.
Scorpio.
It's a pretty cool name.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a little aggressive, maybe.
A little aggressive.
Wait, isn't that a astrological sign?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But then they renamed it to get this the Xbox One X.
I can't believe it.
So I read these back to back, and I genuinely felt, I was like, am I?
Well, also, Skyrim is going to the Switch.
Yeah,
right.
And this is what, a 10-year-old game by now, mm-hmm. or something like that. And this was an E3 announcement,
right?
That this is happening.
Yeah,
I'm like, am I losing my mind? Because who wants to see Minecraft in 4K? I mean, that's cool.
More importantly,
what does it mean?
What does that mean?
What does it mean for a game that has textures that you can see the pixels?
Yeah. Textures on the blocks are like, what are they, like 16 by 16
yes.
or something?
Yeah. But now they're that times four.
Yeah.
On each side.
Yeah.
I guess.
So that's what, I mean, I've been waiting. Like, you know, I really want to get into Minecraft. Problem is, it's the graphics.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what they look like. I'm okay with that. It's just how many pixels there are. There's not enough of them.
Yeah. You can't quite see how
I can't
beautiful
see
those
how low res
are.
The blocks are well enough because I don't have enough pixels.
Yeah.
So now you can.
And then the
people
Xbox
like me,
thing,
this is a big deal.
The so. Xbox thing, I'm like, what? Who's in charge
Xbox
of naming
one?
I mean, even when they had the Xbox 360 and then the Xbox One, that was already
confusing,
stupid
enough,
and confusing.
Right.
Next, I hope they make the next one like the Xbox Box X Box One.
6:30.
I hope they call it Xbox One 9, but the 9 is actually IX in Roman numerals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a lowercase I,
yeah,
a capital X.
Yep.
Yep.
But the X is actually two ones crossing each other.
This has been weird, and we watched some of the other, we didn't watch E3, but we kind of been following up via PC Gamer and a couple other sites as far as what's been happening, and there's a couple really cool games, of course, that got announced, which looks really neat. Clay's got a new one that Griftlands?
Griftlands?
Griftlands.
Hmm.
Grift, that's like when you run a scam or something,
I think,
right?
So, yeah. Yeah. So it's, it looks fun. It's a little party-based RPG thing.
Cool.
Gorgeous, as always. But so there's a big list of really pretty games that came out, but then there's always these just weird, like, what is happening? And we've been talking about how we kind of feel like we're, you know, we're now kind of deep in dev on this Snuppies game, and it's changing a lot. And we've entered what we refer to as the butterscotch slowdown, which is when you're working super focused on these things, time just kind of just disappears. So we'll roll in here at 8, and then suddenly it's 4 p.m.
And we're like, we got a bunch of patch notes. We got a bunch of new stuff.
And we're like, what happened? And last night I told Seth, so I've been doing a bunch of kind of writing and thinking about where the project's going. And I went in there to kind of update my design thinking doc after having a thought while I was taking a walk. And there's a note from 6/12 in there. And I went to add a note for today, yesterday, which happened to also be 6/12. And I didn't remember that I had that morning, I had written that earlier piece in the morning. Yeah. And so I was like, I'm just totally in a time warp.
The date 6/12.
Correct.
Not the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That I was very
if it happened in the same minute, then that would be like a dementia problem.
Yeah, I thought you were trying to make a point about like AM versus PM and then it was like a 12-hour separation.
Yeah. So it's, it happened on the same day and I had genuinely no recollection. Like,
I thought
of
that was yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. No recollection. Yeah. So
that's where we are.
Yeah. I was catching up with Andy today for our one-on-ones where we just kind of sit down and talk about how everyone's doing, you know? And I started talking about like where things were last week. And he was like, I think that was 2 weeks ago. And I was like, no. And then we had to just like sit down and like work through the math. Like, okay. So this happened. Like, oh shit, that was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. What in the hell? Yeah.
So we are in the butterscotch slowdown. And I think part of
it. Or is it the speed down?
I think it's just a regular old time warp. Because sometimes it'll be like, you think something happened 2 days ago and it happened this morning. Yeah. Other times you'll think it happened yesterday and it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. None of it makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Time is all wibbly wobbly.
Time doldrums.
But I think part of it is then when we read these E3 announcements that sound insane, then it feels like
maybe we are.
Our grip on reality is kind of just coming loose, you know? Like Minecraft textures in 4K. And I'm like, what day is it?
I don't really understand. Upside down.
Yeah. Well, but even stuff like that people are sort of excited about, but don't really know how to feel about. So PlayStation mentioned without any details that they're going to have this, I can't remember what they called it, but some sort of smartphone based controller scheme that they're going to add. Hmm. Right. Which somebody pointed out is exactly what like, you don't know Jack does. Right.
Right.
Because it's a really easy problem to solve, right. Like stupidly easy problem to solve. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a thing announced at E3. Like this is a thing that we're going to do, which is really just them saying we're going to become a little less closed than they were because they just don't allow you to do interesting stuff on the platform. But again, like why?
Like, this isn't like a huge technological leap.
No, it's just a huge, it's a small allowance for a business opportunity that was previously closed to us.
Right. So E3, they're like, we've updated one of our policies. Everybody's like,
it's just baffling because there's no reason a developer couldn't already just do that unless PlayStation forbids you from doing it, which is quite possible. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, there's just no reason why like you would need a PlayStation official way of interfacing with those things when it just goes over the internet.
Right.
There's just the tubes. You just send it through the tubes. Yeah. You know.
I'm really excited because like we've never gone to E3. We've never gone to demo or be on stage or anything like that. So I'm excited for sometime in the next couple of years actually being able to partake in riot.
One day we'll make an announcement.
That? Yeah. Right.
One day we'll make an announcement at E3 about Tile Fight 2. Being in 4K resolution.
Everyone be like, I don't even know what that game is.
Actually, no. If we want to really be at E3, I think what you got to do is you got to get a series of sequels up until you're like in the double digits, right? Yeah. So we'll announce like Tile Fight 12 at E3. That's when we'll do it.
It's actually the third one, but nobody will know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it turns out you can just skip.
You can just put whatever numbers on.
Because Tile Fight 2 is the first one, basically. Right. So, also, Adam, you've been playing Oxygen Not Included.
Yeah, we used to have a segment on our show.
Oh yeah,
that was called
"Here's some games we're playing. Let's talk about that."
Yeah, and then we just stopped doing both of those things, basically. Mm-hmm. But last night, or I guess a couple nights ago, I was hanging out with my wife, and we were looking up what was new and showing up on Steam, and I saw Oxygen Not Included, which is by Clay, and it had this like kind of cutesy, you know, vibe, the same way that Don't Starve does, but also pretty dark because it's sort of a survival game. And Jenny had been playing a lot of Fallout Shelter. And I was like, this just looks like an extreme version of that. So I was like, oh, she's probably going to kick out of this. So I sent it her way.
So it's like Fallout Shelter mixed with Tony Hawk Pro Skater. So it's kind of an extreme like Fallout Shelter.
Yeah. More headshots, though. So it's not just 360s. It's also no scopes.
Mm. Yeah.
And 360 no scopes.
360 no scope skateboarding. Right, extreme exactly. 420 edition.
Yep. And so she got it to go check it out, and I was watching her play it, and I was like, I'm gonna give this a shot to you. So I actually said, it's the only early access game I've played in quite some time because I normally avoid those. But I figured Clay would probably do a fairly professional early access, and they did. There's some wonkiness to it, but it feels like a complete, coherent game. But it's really intricate. It takes the whole Don't Starve, everything is horrible, just the roll of the dice at the beginning when the map is generated might be your undoing within minutes. It takes all of that kind of stuff, but then puts it into something like a Fallout shelter. So you basically, you have these clones that get created in this little warp pad thingy. Mm-hmm. And they just go do things for you. So it's a little bit RTS-y, you know? So you'll just go say, I want these things to be mined. And then somebody will, if they want to, go run over and mine it, depending on their personality traits and their skills and stuff. And, but it's very interesting because they have this sort of physics simulation that's mostly just moving water and poison and gases around. And that's it. So you're in an asteroid, and it's called Oxygen Not Included because you just appear. There's like one little block thing that's bubbling oxygen out, but it decays quickly. Hmm. And so then your goal is basically to manage your little space colony by mostly removing waste and creating oxygen, right? Hmm. And it's really interesting. So basically things like carbon dioxide sink, right? And so you can end up, if you make a little pit, then it'll just slowly fill up with carbon dioxide. And if somebody falls into it, they just, their little cheeks puff out because they're holding their breath. And if they get sucked, they just die down there, right? You have to build outhouses and they fill up over time. And then somebody has to come like plunge them to get them clean. but while they're there, they start creating noxious gases also. So then you have to keep them away from the rest of the stuff.
Because they're breathing.
Because you're just in this contained thing. And so you can also, so then you basically start doing research so you can get things like air pumps and air filters and stuff to try to keep things moving. And then you're trying to get your little characters to go run off and go mine stuff and find things. And they're constantly like finding pockets of carbon dioxide and then having to like run back to your base because they're also getting too cold because the heat can change quite a bit. You know, it's a really,
I think I should play this game. It's really interesting.
I can't say that I'd recommend it yet without, like, there's no tutorial to speak of. We had to read up some stuff on the internet.
I'll wishlist it when it comes out.
I would say wishlist it, but it's a, there's a lot of stuff I don't like about Don't Starve. Mostly it's just a survival game but it feels like a crafting game. Mm-hmm. And so I just always feel super disappointed when I just end up completely fucked and that's it. Right. But this one just feels like a survival game. You're just trapped on an asteroid without any air, right? So
that's sort of the totally, most extreme survival.
So it kind of totally
you can't
makes
breathe.
Exactly. Yeah. It just makes perfect sense. But I actually thought it was really fun having read a lot of books recently, like Seven Eves, or played a lot of Kerbal Space Program, which are all about doing stuff.
Maybe
in space
The Martian
and The Martian. Mm. It's really appropriate because all that stuff that you know, read people thinking about it in these stories, you could now just have to battle and deal with. But then the whole thing is done in that cutesy clay style, which adds just like this fun layer on top. Cause like the characters also look at sick. And then if they sneeze, it makes this little cloud around them. If anybody else is in it, then they have a chance of getting sick too. And you can make a little medical cot and they'll just hobble over to it all awkwardly. And then climb in there and just look really sad. And like, suddenly a cast will be on their arm and stuff. Yeah, so they just added a ton of personality to these characters. It is very interesting. My colony got overrun so there was a urine spill at some point, which is not great.
You'll have that.
And then it contaminated my water supply a little bit. Which is kind of a problem.
So everybody's kind of like drinking pee.
Yeah, but mostly the space was just really cold that I just happened to, you know, be created inside of.
If you make it cold enough, then a urine spill just becomes like a urine stalactite.
It probably would, but I think they would freeze to death first. So they're cold the whole time. So they have to use little hamster wheels to power things. So one of them always has to be like running on a hamster wheel. But it turns out that then like your little heating elements that you can make that have to be powered by a hamster wheel.
It's a human wheel, right? There's a person running.
But then it consume oxygen right in their vicinity. So if people are really close to it, then they have to hold their breath and they run away again. And so then after a while, then nobody can power it anymore because there wasn't enough oxygen nearby.
Asphyxiated.
Then the whole place is getting colder and colder. There's a Rock, Paper, Shotgun has a pretty hilarious write-up where somebody basically just played, basically just kind of a first look at it, but they just played it and then they just told the story of their colony.
Right.
And it's very amusing.
Reminds me of RimWorld in that regard.
And that was the reference they talked about a lot too. Mm. So yeah, I think it's going to be worth something. And really, I mean, it's amusing enough that I think you could just check it out now and just try it to see what it looks like. But if you got the early access jitters,
mm-hmm. then just wishlist it.
Well, we've talked about sort of the difference between systems design and designing loops and that sort of thing. And we're experiencing this a little bit now with the game we're working on currently, because it has this form of this sort of almost like a battalion battling game. So you show up and you choose which of your people to deploy from a randomly selected set. And so each game is actually just a little bit different, and certain things can happen that you didn't necessarily anticipate. And so there ends up emerging a story every single time.
Right.
which is very different actually than anything we've built before. Because even in Crashlands, you know, there were certain things that could happen, but there's very loose ways in which sort of additional player stories could emerge. So for example, like you chop down a piece of sawgrass and piss off a nearby wampit, and it happens to be close enough to like two more to sort of pull a herd onto you, for example. But those are like essentially it as far as it sort of emergent right. weird stuff that would happen that players could tell stories about. And we're already seeing it with this card game, which has made it just really compelling to play in the same sort of way that is, where yeah. it's actually just all these systems. And then
there's no real even balance to speak of. There's just a bunch right. of things that interact with each other.
It's actually the imbalance that provides interesting yeah. scenarios. Right. Yeah, like I had a match. So in Snuppies, it's all about like you've got your preset, you know, deck of cards, basically. And you're deploying these guys into the field, and each character you can deploy will have some kind of unique trait, unique capability. And so we added these characters. They're called, right now they're called Keek Bomps, mm-hmm. and they're just like a leg with a head, basically. And their specialty is that when they pass a unit on the board, they kick that unit backwards a couple spaces. And so I know in this scenario where just by chance I had gotten to deploy three of these, and so did my opponent. And so
they're just kicking each other back
they just
and
kept
forth.
Kicking each other back and forth nonstop. And so like you can also fling hammers onto the field to like deal damage to stuff. So we kind of ended up at this weird standstill where our characters just kept kicking each other back and forth. And then we had to just like slowly kill them with hammers just to kind of clear the field. Which looking at it, and I was like, oh, that's kind of broken. But then I was laughing the whole time. Right. So I'm like, maybe it's not.
Maybe it's perfectly
fine. Yeah. So normally that doesn't happen.
It's been really fun to make. And I think it's already there in terms of creating this rich set of user stories. And we're not even starting. Yeah. We have three units and that sort of thing. So
well, I think by having the components, the systems themselves feel like they have a lot of personality to them as well. I think that helps enormously. Yeah. I mean, and in playing Oxygen Not Included, you just feel like your little characters are real little people just trying to do stuff, but they all suck in at least one, but often many ways. You know? They have stuff like irritable bowel syndrome, so they're in the bathroom a lot, you know, kind of, or narcolepsy, so suddenly they'll just be asleep when they're supposed to be on the hamster
wheel. Why would you send a narcoleptic person to be your envoy into an asteroid to make a...
Or really any of these people, you know.
Right.
But I mean, the whole idea is, you know, you just have what you have.
And it's your ragtag crew.
There's a reason why very few people can be astronauts.
Yeah.
Because of these
things. Everyone's
got but I think part of it too is it is a ragtag crew, right? So you're kind of, you're both managing them, but they also kind of do what they want. And then you're also rooting for them at the same time. But then there might be some character that you just hate because they won't do their job, or there's like a loud sleeper who you need to put in a bed somewhere else so he doesn't wake everybody else up.
This reminds me of, I loved the game, the black and white games.
Yeah.
Where you have this giant creature and you're a god and you can do stuff in the world, but then you also have a creature that is sort of your envoy, you know, mm-hmm. it's your ambassador to the world, and you train it and it watches what you do. And then it tries to emulate your behavior. And so you may be like doing something like maybe like pick up a villager and just like throw him or something with your little god hand. And then a moment later, you kind of like, you lose track of your creature. You turn around and you see it, and it's just like picking up handfuls of villagers and just like chucking them into the hillside. It has its own personality. So like that kind of thing adds those emergent situations that you just normally wouldn't see, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
We also have the Shenanigans Jam wrapped up last
2 weekend, 3 weeks,
2 weekends ago? Week and a half ago, basically.
Yeah. Well, ratings wrapped up last week.
Ratings wrapped up last week. So there were 132 games. How many ratings?
1600.
Like 1600 or something like that. So so we now have the games sorted by ranking, which means we can now put together our post-jam video, which we're going to do sometime in the next week probably. And we're just going to grab the top 5-10 games, something like that, and just do a little playthrough, make a little YouTube video, throw some commentary on there. I don't really know what we're going to say or do.
Just going to have fun.
We're just going to have fun with them. So we'll be doing that. And then otherwise, as far as the studio stuff goes, we've started up a little quest for gains in the studio. Mm-hmm. So we're all getting back in the gym.
But the important note here is that Seth ate an entire rotisserie chicken for lunch yesterday.
I did. I did do this.
Which is surprising.
How big of it? Because they come in various sizes.
It was a small one. Okay. It was a $7 rotisserie chicken. Just went by the grocery store. I went to the grocery store to get ketchup because I was going to have a burger for lunch. Walked past this beautiful rotisserie chicken.
They do smell really good.
Yeah, and I was like, no, I'm going to have this instead. So I just brought that home and just ate it.
It's got to be at least like a pound of chicken.
I think it probably was. But, you know, you gotta meet your protein quotas.
You gotta meet your protein? Yeah.
All right. So that's all that's happened this past week. Unless I'm missing anything. No, that's good.
All right. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
We're in a time flip flab. Mm-hmm. So let's get on to some questions. These questions come from podcast.bscotch.net, and they are asked by our players, fellow developers, just all kinds of people. So let's get started. First question comes from BabooTube, who says, are you aware Vsauce 3 mentioned both Flop Rocket and Quadrupus Rampage in the series App All Night? If yes, what are your thoughts? If no, what are your feelings?
I knew that?
Yep.
I didn't, so I'll talk about my feelings.
How do you feel Adam, about this?
I'm confused because I don't know most of those words.
Yeah. So Vsauce 3
is, so you know, Vsauce is a YouTube channel where they just like, I think they look at things.
Okay. Didn't know that.
They're like, here's how this works. And they type.
What does the V stand for?
Very.
Very sauce.
I think it's veracity.
Veritas.
Sauce.
Veritas maybe. Something about truth. Sauce. Truth sauce.
Cool.
And
truth sauce.
Vsauce 3, I think, does like reviews and stuff.
Is it like,
so we've been mentioning it a couple.
It's the sequel.
Third channel.
It's like
third,
it's a trilogy, okay. You know.
How do you feel about that?
Still mostly don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if we have feelings anymore.
Just at all.
Well, so this is an interesting point, which I think when we first started making games, we would get really amped up about when like some website would pick up one of our mm-hmm. games and do a review on it, or a YouTuber or whatever. And what we've come to learn over the years is that no individual thing truly matters. Mm-hmm. What really matters is, it's sort of an all or nothing thing. So if every place is talking about your game, if tons and tons of YouTubers are playing it, and if lots and lots of review sites are reviewing it, then that is a wide enough net and it creates enough social proof to convince people, oh yeah, this is a thing. This is a thing that is good and people are playing it, right? Mm-hmm. But if out of that whole group, any individual one, if they were to like not do it, it wouldn't really change much. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, you know, when we hear about any independent channel or whatever, doing a review or a playthrough or whatever, it doesn't really register much because it doesn't really translate into anything tangible on our end by itself, even if they've got like a million subscribers or something.
Yeah. Well, and when Crashlands launched, we were really pumped and we watched all the videos that were coming out as they mm-hmm. were coming out and right before the launch actually happened. And then I think, you know, kind of once we got past that window, we just watched a lot of people like play this thing and talk about it. And so now I
kind of a fatigue part too. But that's good. I feel good about it.
I mean,
here's the thing. No individual thing matters, which is true. And that's kind of like the glass half empty thing to look at it. Mm-hmm. It's also the case that they all matter.
Yep.
Sort of collectively.
In
right.
Aggregate.
Yeah. And so I'm good.
I'm glad that Vsauce 3 played those games.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from Edward. Was there anything surprising or amusing in your student evaluations? How were your scores? Mm. So Sam and I taught a course at mm-hmm. Washington University on game development.
Yeah.
How'd we do?
Did they get to write up just whatever they wanted on these things?
They could put comments in various sections and stuff.
Nice.
One student's overall feedback just said, Crashlands rocks, which I thought was funny.
It's a good course evaluation.
we kind of
missed the target.
We got the highest, I think we got the highest reviews in the department that we're in.
Yeah, we were, yeah.
Which is neat.
But I think it's because we came into it just as like, it's just one semester thing. We gave it our all. And because we work in the field, we also have tons and tons of real world examples mm-hmm. of why things matter and stuff.
Well, you also hadn't been, you know, beat down by years of teaching students that don't yep. give a fuck.
We don't have that.
Because you almost did. And you only did it for one semester.
Yeah. So we have mm-hmm. that. We have that sort of naive optimism.
Yep.
And then because it's not our day job, then we have actually like no fear of
laissez-faire. You know?
We have it's no like, fear of anything, right? We're like we don't care if we get bad student evaluations. So we're just gonna say what we want to say.
Yeah, I swore a lot.
Yeah, it was just a very freewheeling kind of a vibe, which I guess sort of like
people enjoy it.
Yeah. It probably just felt different to the students. So yeah, it was It was pretty good. It was fun.
Yeah,
we haven't decided what the future of this
they will be. they asked for what individual feedback you'd give to any instructor. And I didn't, no one gave me anything. No one actually gave me any feedback that was like a piece that I could improve on. They were just like, oh, it was fun. Or I was good. Or someone said something about my beard.
Nice.
Somebody else said something about, because we got jacked before GDC, which happened to be in the middle of the semester.
Oh, yeah.
Someone said something about our gym regiment or something like that. It was weird. It was just a weird thing.
It was pretty weird.
Yeah. The thing that kind of felt like an Uber experience, right? Because like we get together with these students and then we give them a rating on how well they did in the class, and then they give us a rating on how well we taught. And presumably those things matter in some context in the future. But I don't know. It was an interesting experience. All right, next question comes from Skalgust. In a previous podcast, you guys discussed how you hated crafting games. And so in Crashlands, you basically just omitted the parts of crafting you disliked. Can you talk more about this? What are the good and the bad parts of crafting games?
I mean, the general point here is that the worst part of most games is oftentimes an inventory system.
Mm-hmm.
Any game that has stuff in it needs to have some way that you manage the stuff. And most games have you just manage it bit by bit, which is really, really damn annoying.
Crafting is interesting too, because so think about a game like Skyrim or World of Warcraft, or, you know, like these are huge games and they have crafting in them, right? But people don't refer to Skyrim as a crafting game, and they don't call World of Warcraft a crafting game. And weirdly, when you have a game that is a crafting game, like Terraria, Minecraft, you know, Don't Starve, they tend to keep all of the stuff that those games have, those non-crafting games with crafting systems, like limited inventory and all that stuff. They keep all these kind of bad systems, even though the point of the game is the crafting part.
Right.
And so that's kind of the thing, is that none of it is streamlined. It's just a copy paste of crafting concepts from existing.
I mean, it does depend on context though, because something like Don't Starve, because it's not a crafting game first, it's a survival game first. And crafting is your main mechanism of dealing with the survival problem. And so there it actually makes sense. I mean, it's one of the reasons I hate the game, but it does make sense for what the game is intending to do, right? Which is when you go out in the world, it's very punishing. When you go out in the world and you can only hold like 5 things or 8, whatever it is by default, and you need to be able to go get enough stuff on your foraging trip to survive and do that before nightfall and like collect as many things like up until you just have no time left so you can maximize your chance of survival. And then you just find another way to limit it which is what inventory does there. It still sucks to manage it a lot, and it could be streamlined to make it still be a limit, but not one that you have to interact with in a sucky way.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it is the case that even when the context makes sense to have inventory management, that it's set up just as a thing you have to do without them thinking about the user experience of what is it like to actually deal with this, even if it should be here.
Did we talk about Portal Knights?
I don't think so, but I was just about to bring that up.
Yes, we played Portal Knights as a studio actually, I don't know, 2 weeks ago.
Is it early access still? I think
it might have been 6 months
ago. It just launched. Right. So we were like, oh, sweet. Let's get in on it because it looks beautiful.
Let's go Knights and Portals.
Yeah. And so for those of you who don't know, it's basically...
it's like a 4K a co-op. Minecraft.
It's a beautiful Minecraft
basically.
Game. So we hopped in there as a crew to go just kind of explore and check it out. And within 10 minutes, all of us had full inventories.
Yeah.
And the problem in that game is that each little world, so instead of something like Minecraft where it's just a huge huge territory that you're exploring, in Portal Knights you basically hop on these different portals to go between these different zones that are each by themselves are actually very small and have a limited number of the things that you want and need. And they did some really weird design choice, which is that everybody has to travel together. So
it's to me, I'm pretty confident that was not a design decision.
I'm sure it was
more of a lazy workaround for a technical problem.
Yeah. So what ends up happening though is, say, like my bag is full, but Seth, like maybe I got
plenty of space.
He easily already like a stacked his stuff or whatever. I need to take time to, you know, basically defrag. I gotta get all my shit out, put it in the right chest.
You gotta go back to the base.
Go back to base. But Seth's ready to go. And so as a result, we ended up within, I think, 10 or 20 minutes hitting this really weird point where there was just a lot of waiting around because we couldn't make any progress in the current world we were in, but someone needed to, say, put their stuff away in a chest. and then someone else needed to do it or whatever else. And so it ended up, the gameplay started off, I think actually started off really fun, and then it got overly burdensome as time went on.
Yeah, I ended up playing again with my wife, and because I knew what it was going to be like going in. Mm-hmm. And so, and also recognized that crafting is actually a lot like Terraria, where crafting can be treated as relatively unimportant for stuff except for like weapons and armor. But for actually building a base and that kind of stuff, if you want to go really minimal in something like Terraria, that's a totally fine approach. And so I took that same approach here, where I was like, because also because of all this difficulty where you can't just go back and visit your home, or and you can't even have a home because you would have to teleport there to get there, thus bringing your entire crew with you. I was just like, let's not have a home. We'll just carry the few pieces of crafting equipment we need. We also don't need almost any resource.
Right.
Most of them are used for crafting a house. But a house, which
you can't really,
is a burden.
You can't take the time to build because if one of you wants to
do automatically pick up things.
You do, but then you can just dump them here. Because I found that some games, my inventory just feels like it's full all the goddamn time, you know? But in this one, it doesn't quite feel that way because of how things stack and actually how few kinds of things there are when you're in one little world. And so in that case, I just would go through and purge my inventory once every like 20 minutes.
This is an interesting problem because it's the fact that you have to travel together that makes the inventory weird to deal with.
That means that somebody never sat down and thought, because this is what we did for Crashlands, right? We said, this is an adventure game first, and you use crafting as your way of navigating that world. So how do we make sure it still always feels like the adventure comes first? And to us, that meant you didn't have to go home. You could just continue your adventure. And that was what led to the infinite inventory system, because we designed the inventory system around the major gameplay mechanic we wanted.
Well, and importantly, like if you chop down a tree or you defeat a creature or something, the idea of, oh yeah, all the parts came out and you could technically pick them up, but now you can't. You're out of space now. So that thing that you just did, you just don't get to have the rewards
from it.
That's
not fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other interesting one, which we did not get away from, but I think it's important to note, is the grinding nature of a crafting game. Which I always find it's kind of comical when people comment on Crashlands and they're like, oh yeah, the game is a grind. It's like, yeah, you have to go chop down literally 1,000 trees.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's just like, that's what the game is. The game is about slowly making
progress.
It's
about accumulating resources.
Yeah. And so it is naturally a grinding game. And we've talked internally about the fact that we did miss out, I think, on one big opportunity, which was including more complete items that drop, that have a drop rate. That come out of just enemies or trees or whatever else that are just done. So the gongs, for example, which are these weapons you get from fishing that you just fish up a weapon. It's one of the most sought after things in the game. It's one of the things people talk about the most, how to get them, strategies for getting them. And we only have actually a few other weapons or just other things that work in that similar sort of way where they're just complete when you find them out in the world. And that serves, I think, a really important purpose that we didn't quite see in the development of it, which is sort of breaking up that feeling of the grind, because you occasionally get these discrete jumps or this discrete item that you just get. There's no, you need to go harvest, 300 pieces of wood to build this thing. It just suddenly is there or it's not. And Terraria, I think, does an excellent job of actually mixing those two modes together, where you have the general crafting tree, but then you have this really extensive drop tree where you run around and you either get a thing or you don't, and you just get surprised oftentimes by the thing you get, and it can change your goals.
And there's so much stuff that you can only really be looking for one or two things at a time in your memory.
But you'll find
still find other things that you didn't even know existed in the game that you then have to go check out and then maybe discover an entirely new crafting tree that you're interested in.
So I think if we were to pursue a direct sequel to Crashlands, I think rolling in more of that. Yeah, we are very hypothetical.
We're not currently.
But if in the future we were to pursue that, I think we would roll in a much more robust overall system for that sort of thing to make it so that there's a crafting element with regard to discrete progress that you can get from exploring and adventuring out in the world, as well as the general grindy, quote unquote, progress.
You need a mixture, right? Because a grind is sort of, by its definition, it's slow incremental progress toward a goal, right? Mm-hmm. And what makes it feel like a grind is, it's the same idea of like getting paid hourly. It's like you do it for an hour, you get your money. You do it for another hour, you get your money, right?
There's no surprise. This is what it is.
Yeah, it's like this hour you might get $0 or $5,000, right? It's just always going to be however much you get, right? And the grind aspect is actually just, it's more of a comment about monotony, Mm-hmm. Right, it's just you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you know what the outcome is going to be, and you also know exactly how long you have to do it, right? You know how many trees you have to chop down or whatever. And so I think having a mixture of those things, so I always think about older World of Warcraft as a great framework for thinking about this, where they would often have, like, you'd go into a dungeon and there'd be, you know, five bosses in there, and, you know, boss number four has that one sword that you're trying to get. Mm-hmm. And you know that sword has like a 20% chance of dropping. And then when it drops, you also have to roll the dice against the other people in your party to try to get that sword. Mm-hmm. So you may run that dungeon, you know, 15 times before you finally get that sword. And you may even see it drop a couple times on the way and somebody else gets it. And when you finally get it, you're just like, oh, shit, yeah, right? Because it's kind of like you won the lottery, right? Because a fortunate event happened to you. But while you're
even
running—
Even though you worked for it and even though you grinded it the whole time.
But if it was basically, hey, you can have this sword. Here's the sword vendor standing outside the dungeon. And every time you kill boss number four, you get a sword token. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you hand those tokens to the person that just give you the sword. It's going to feel very different.
Yeah. Even though it is the same in terms of what you do.
It's the same what you do, but the feeling is different. This is why we always thought it was kind of funny, because people will simultaneously talk about the feeling of grinding in Crashlands. And then the thing they're most excited about is the gong, as Sam said, mm-hmm. which requires you, in some cases, people will fish for like 6 hours, yeah. 8 hours to catch this thing. And if we just said, yeah, you get this once you've fished for 8 hours, people would be like, well, fuck that. But because it's random, then any cast might be the one.
Right? But I think interestingly, you do need this sort of, you need sort of like the stew in which to put these discrete
bumps in progress, both,
right? Yeah.
So this is why in WoW they also have like they have reputations that you earn.
Right, so you do grind.
It's like while you're in the dungeon, you're always getting something. Mm-hmm. So you clear the dungeon and you've earned, you know, 500 reputation points for a faction, and then that opens up vendors who will sell you items.
Right.
And in the meantime, you're also getting chances to get these really good items that you want. So you got to kind of mix it up.
Yeah. So it is an interesting thing. And I think, you know, now that we've gone through dev on a game like Crashlands, and part of the thing we're finding with building out Snuppies, which is, again, it's actually a systems heavy game in a similar way that Crashlands was, is we're sort of figuring out, you know, this is our second sort of push at a more systems oriented game design. So we're finding out a lot of things about just how to think about the approach and how to sort of stay calm when things don't feel good, I think, is a big piece of it.
Yeah, because they never do at the beginning.
Yeah, especially...
It's always shitty.
The more systems you need... I mean, I could think about, like, the idea of oxygen not included, like, early dev on that.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have a strong vision. You got to be like, this, it's going to be good. Just wait 6 months because we need to be able to pee on stuff, poop on stuff, pump these different gases around. Yep. We need to have the world simulation done, and your guys need to be little idiots. Like, all of those things are
huge. It's all AI.
Yeah, it's all AI. So... that's just going to take, I'm sure it took just a couple of months before it even felt remotely good.
Yep.
And you got to have a strong, like, it's going to work. I could feel it.
Yeah. Well, and you often see this comment in game developer, like subreddits or mm-hmm. forums or groups or whatever, where one of the big questions is about being motivated. We'd be like, how do you, like, especially if you're a solo developer, how do you stay motivated through the early stages of a project? Because it just sucks.
Yeah.
Like, the game is just really bad. And it depends on the design. So if you're making an action game, so think about a game like Superhot,
mm-hmm.
that mechanically actually is simple to execute. And art-wise, it's just like polygons, right? And so that's the kind of game that you could have in a really fun state in a day and a half or two, if you know what you're doing. But a game like Oxygen Included, like you said, may take 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. And that's if you know what you're doing, it may take 3-4 months. And if you're working on it full time.
But if you just have a vision and you're like, all right, I want to simulate the experience in a fun way of being teleported mm-hmm. into the middle of an asteroid that's just trying to murder you.
Yep.
Like if that's the token you got to hold on to, like, it's just going to take a while because you don't know before you build these things.
So you have to have that coherent vision.
But an interesting part about that too, with reference to that game specifically, is had they gone with a different personality style and art style, the one that was, you know, more realistic, like This War of Mine.
Sure.
Right. That would have been like a dark, depressing game that would just suck.
Well, it would tilt too far away from being amusing. Right.
Right. And well, and that's the key with this thing is that if they focused, they may have actually had a fun gameplay experience thing in a very short period of time just by focusing on art and characters and, mm-hmm. and their character AI, because mm-hmm. the characters have so much apparent personality to them even just doing stuff and being like, I need people to go decide if they're going to go mine some stuff for me, right? And then maybe somebody will just go to sleep instead or whatever. So that you feel like you have these little living beings pretty early, before even they could necessarily do anything, or maybe even before they could die because there was oxygen to deal with and stuff. The personality of the game can be so strong that you can have fun being immersed in it, even if the gameplay mechanics aren't there yet.
But can you imagine like that, but in a like a darker, photorealistic, full like 3D graphics setting? The characters die, and like instead of like, oh, their cute little cheeks puffed out, you know, instead like they're like clutching their throat, and you know, it's like super realistic and horrifying, you know, like. It would be a very different experience.
Yeah. No thanks.
And actually a lot harder to execute graphically as well.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's kind of a double negative. So yeah, I mean, it's hard, but it takes time. The next question comes from Dark Silver Hawk, who says, what sorts of games did you enjoy as kids? How are they similar to the kinds of games you now make? So growing up, we had, basically we had Game Boys, which we were allowed to play on car rides, long car rides specifically.
Which also meant that if we knew that we were going somewhere,
we'd get
up early and then go just sit in the car.
We'd be like, I'm ready for the road trip, just in the car.
I'm just going to go wait in the car.
In the car prepping for 3 hours. Prepping with Zelda or something. We had a lot of the early Game Boy games, like Kirby's Dream Land was the first game that I ever owned.
That was super good.
And
crap out of that one.
Wario. Oh, Wario, so good.
Yep. And we each got a monthly allowance.
$20 or something?
Yeah, we get like 10 or 20 bucks a month, depending on.
I don't think it was 20 bucks
year.
A month.
Was it 20? I think it was more like 10.
Yeah.
And then.
Took a while to buy.
I think once we started mowing in our early teens, we got bumped up to 20.
Although I think it started off still the same, actually, you know.
And then we had
it was very cheap labor.
Yeah.
We had to stage a picket.
We had a cost of living adjustment.
Right.
And so we would basically, we were gifted Game Boys, but we had to buy our games, you know? And so, so our allowance came from, you know, helping chores around the house and stuff like that. And so we would, every few months, we would each have enough money to buy a Game Boy game. And then we would go to Walmart or whatever, which like I think that was the only place we could get
a Walmart.
Yeah. We grew up in a town of 10,000 people. So there was one place where you could get, video games, which was the Walmart.
That wasn't there when we were growing up.
There was a smaller one.
It was just really small.
There was a smaller, kind of crappier one.
That's right.
Now we got a super nice one.
I always thought we had to get our stuff from Des Moines when we were going.
That was for computer games.
If we got computer games, which was a little bit later, because we didn't have a gaming capable computer, I think, until maybe I was like 10 or 11 or something like that.
Older than that.
Yeah. So around the time in middle school, we got a desktop PC, which we had a lot of Blizzard games. We had like the Diablo and StarCraft and the Warcraft games.
I think it's an interesting thing. I feel like we played most of the games that everybody played in that time period.
Yeah. Or we had enough access to them because we had friends who would go to their houses and they would, you know, all of our friends had every console.
Yeah. I do remember
GoldenEye at other people's houses and Super Mario 64.
I do remember my first brush with like more open worldly feeling things was, I don't even know if it counts technically as open world, but it felt like at the time was Smuggler's Run. Did you guys ever get to play that?
Mm-mm.
It was a racing game on PlayStation, but you drove around like these like dune buggies out in the desert, essentially. And I don't know what it was about it, but like you would pick up packages and drop stuff off, and you could do competitive modes with your friends. And there's like a campaign that you went through. And it was just a ton of fun. And I remember going over to my friend's house and playing that. And the way they handled, I vaguely remember like the way they handled the horizon and the camera and stuff was just really, really neat. So that one I think was big. And then of course, I think things like Pokemon and that sort of games of that ilk, I think kind of stick with you. Monster Rancher was a big one, which we've actually been talking about internally in the studio when we're talking about trying to figure out how people are going to progress in this game that we're making. Kind of using these games as these old touchstones and reference pieces for the stuff we're doing now. So yeah, we played a lot of Diablo, a lot of StarCraft, Warcraft, Final Fantasy, Half-Life.
Yeah, once we got into high school years, we started actually getting consoles and stuff. And I saved up money to like build my own computer in high school. I worked at a grocery store and built a PC and got myself an Xbox and a crappy TV that I had in my room. And so I started kind of like piling together scraps and components and stuff. So I ended up playing well, like we got like Half-Life 2 in high school and lots of good stuff. So, but yeah, we also had limited screen time,
yes,
which was, here's a question for you guys. Mm. So when we grew up, we had 30 minutes of screen time a day, and we had an egg timer next to the computer. Mm-hmm. So we'd set a timer, and then that was all you got. And so if you started like playing a StarCraft match and then like you lagged out and then the match ended and then you had to start over, well, too bad. You still used your 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, you only got 15 minutes left. How do you feel about that in retrospect? Good idea, bad idea?
It was a good idea.
I don't have enough of a memory of
I think it was a good idea only because
this is for all the parents out there.
Yeah, no, I think it taught us some time value for one, and then also there wasn't. Well, I think it does one thing on the flip side, which is it made playing video games just even more special because it was a thing.
It had a backfiring effect.
Right. She's like, and suddenly if they're like, oh yeah, you guys got a free night, what do you want to do? It's like, I want to do the thing that you don't allow me to do. So
yeah,
I'm gonna go
play it. Must be awesome.
Right. So I guess happened a few times.
I think, I don't know, for me, I think it actually kind of pushed me away from video games because I didn't do it enough and I had to presumably kind of rationalize that it was fine to not be playing games and that I guess other stuff must be more important and, you know, and whatever. Because we spent most of our time as kids outside doing stuff,
yep,
you know,
yeah,
and reading books because there's no book limit and nobody ever better fucking enforce one. Yeah, completely insane.
8 minutes of reading a day.
Right. And I think in a lot of ways, the fact that we had limited screen time are what allowed us to be successful as adults.
Yeah.
Because as kids, it was certainly the case that we had no self-control.
Yeah. And you always want to go to the flashiest, coolest thing with all the explosions and lasers. Yeah. And
I think that kind of helped sort of pave the way for the intolerance and impatience I have now for things just taking my time away and like, and trying to grab my focus in really obvious ways.
Cause you know what it is like to focus on a thing.
Yeah. And just to not be around that kind of stuff. Cause I think I have to imagine if I was just steeped in like, you know, cartoons back. I mean, if I go back and look at that shit today, you know, the cartoons that are integrated with commercials and then the commercials, mm-hmm. you know, that stuff was fucking wild. How obvious it was and what it was attempting to do, which was just make you buy things and,
or make you demand your parents.
Well,
it
was exactly that. Yeah. Right? And of course, I know that I had no clue that was happening when I was a kid. And we had our, whatever it was, our Saturday morning cartoons that we got to watch. But I think in the whole, that was a really good thing.
Because, yeah, I do think so.
Because just my tolerance for that is just basically zero now.
So I guess parents, buy your kids a Kindle, get the $10 a month Kindle Unlimited subscription.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
But then you know they're going to sideload it with games. I'm pretty sure you can do
that. Can't, not a Kindle. Not a regular Kindle. Not like a paperwhite Kindle. It uses an e-ink screen that refreshes like once per second. Okay. So,
the refresh rate is
not like a calculator.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. It's much worse than a TI-83 even for gaming.
Yeah.
So, So, I mean, that was,
I do think it was good. I think because
it
teaches the ability to focus, I think.
Yeah. But also that like you said earlier, it helps you understand how that you have finite time and that you have to choose how to spend it on things, mm-hmm. because I think it's very easy when you do something, any kind of a consumable entertainment medium like games and TV and stuff that you can get lost in without really doing any work. Because for me, like reading, if like reading interesting stuff, like still I get lost in it. And I think in a lot of ways it can also be a dangerous entertainment mm-hmm. medium.
Yeah. I often stay up too late if I'm reading, if I'm reading a good book, I'll be like, oh shit, it's 1 a.m.
Yep. So I think these are all kind of on par, actually. I think the one value you get out of reading is that it improves your language dramatically, which mm-hmm. is the tool that you use to think and solve problems. So yeah,
I think it was good.
I think it was
a good call.
30 minutes a day. Yeah. And especially think now, because if you think about what is available on screens now.
Oh yeah.
Because when we were growing up, it was like video games or cartoons. Those were our screen options.
Yeah. And we had to make a choice.
We did watch Discovery Channel or Nova, I think, on Sunday nights with our parents.
Yeah, we'd get a big bowl of popcorn and watch
nature documentaries.
Yeah, a lot of the message there was that if you're not just consuming things, but you're using them as a way to think about stuff, mm-hmm. right? And I think some of that message got a little bit garbled with our own parents, mostly because they were so unfamiliar with the medium of video games, you know? So we had some educational games, but they went into our screen time, you know?
Which like meant we had, like, math blaster.
Yeah, exactly. So we had to choose between playing an educational game and playing, you know, StarCraft, like, duh, you know?
Right.
StarCraft. There's some things that I think require, you know, as the parent, you'd have to understand more about what the thing was you were dealing with and have consistent rules applied to it. But yeah, I just think there's just not a lot of value as a kid in looking at a screen, unless you're programming.
Correct.
Yeah. But you may not have the logical circuitry to do it until a little bit later.
No, I think you do. People have started teaching their kids at like 4.
Oh, okay.
Done.
It's just another, perfect. It's just another language. People start learning languages when they're people start telling you words at your face, right? The moment you come out of the womb, trying to get you to learn language. And think about how complex human language is, right?
Yeah, it mostly makes
computer
no sense.
Programming. It makes no sense at all. It only makes sense in context, and it's very messy, and it has a written component that has nothing to do with the spoken. It's just some glyphs we put down, and we're like, "This means cat," right? But now you look at programming, and programming, everything means exactly one thing. You're trying to tell a complete idiot, which is a computer, how to do something it doesn't know how to do, which means it's just a set of plain instructions that literally can't be simpler than
and they just go in order.
And they just go in order.
Whereas in human language, you can have a sentence where the beginning of the sentence changes its meaning depending on what happens later in the sentence.
Right.
It's self-referential.
Right. Which you...
It's all about also about intonation and body language and there's other things that change.
So just the idea that kids are too young to learn computer programming, but yeah, let's teach them how to read and teach them how to speak is batshit crazy.
So really,
there's a way harder than learning how to program.
So sometimes you hear about, you know, those kids that are raised by wolves, you know,
kids
that are everywhere.
I hear about those all the time.
Yeah. So, and then they learn how to talk wolf talk and stuff like that.
Yeah. And program wolf programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wonder who's going to be the first kid who's raised by computers who only speaks to computers.
Whoa.
Yeah. You get this fresh baby.
I feel like, but so I'm,
just
I'm
put in, it with computers.
I'm imagining Alexa. Alexa being the one who raises this child. And I feel like their speech would be so stunted.
But she doesn't want you, but Alexa doesn't want you to know how to program because she wants to just make you buy things.
That's true.
You know? And she doesn't want you to hack her.
Yeah.
She's got some presumably sort of survival, you know, mechanisms going on here. So if anybody gets raised by Alexa, they'll just be, well, I guess regular American. They'll just buy lots
of stuff that they don't need. So, all right, we got time for one more question. This question comes from Raston1. I am a beginning game developer who is done with tutorial projects and would like to move on to a project that I can get excited about. However, I'm not sure what core game mechanic to use. What design resources, books, websites, etc. do you recommend? So for starters, let's flip this around. What resources should you avoid? Because that's important to know.
Also, the whole premise makes me uncomfortable, which we can also talk about.
Yeah.
Why is that, Adam?
So the idea here that I'm done with tutorials and I want to do something that I can be excited about, because the exciting part of this whole thing is in learning how to make games and learning how to solve game related problems and learning how to take an idea you have and cast it into.
You're saying that it just feels like a tutorial all the time.
Yeah. Life is a tutorial.
Life is just a huge tutorial.
Yeah. But
it's not that it feels like a tutorial. It's that because a tutorial just takes you by the hand and tries to guide you to teach you some things. Right. It's that the goal. So I would agree getting away from tutorials is great, but not to try to find something that you're passionate about, but to be able to solve your own problems, because that's the part you're supposed to be passionate about, not the game itself. Because if you're passionate about the game, you're going to be just disappointed literally the entire time you're working, because the game isn't done until you finished it. And that's the time you get to be excited.
And
about
sadly, it. Because you made it, you can never experience it
for the first time
as a player would.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if that's the thing that motivates you, you really should not be making games.
Or just take a frame shift, probably.
Really, you should just take a frame shift. Which and this is a thing you can do, and we in fact do constantly in the studio all the time. Anytime we start to be uncertain about something, we just say, how do we reframe this in our own minds so that the thing that we need to do is also the thing we want to do?
Yeah. So then as far as resources go, things to be careful of, making game engines.
Yeah, it's a grab.
You mean things just to not do.
Things to not do.
Yeah.
You'll talk to a lot of programmers who are really excited about. So this kind of comes back to what Adam was talking about of what problems are you excited about? People who are hardcore programmers get excited about hardcore programming problems. And one of the biggest problems is, how do you build an entire game engine from scratch? Mm-hmm. That's a pretty tough problem to solve.
So is just building a game on top of an engine.
Yeah. And so if you are planning on making video games and you talk to other people, and their advice is learn C++ and start programming your own game engine.
Run away.
Just stop asking them for advice because they're just wrong.
So I would suggest you pick up either Unity or Game Maker, and then you just do a game jam.
Yep.
Yeah. And whatever comes out of that jam, if it's got remote funness to it, then you polish it up and finish it within like a month.
Yep.
And then do it again.
Don't seek out projects. It's just, it literally doesn't make sense as a goal. Yep. The goal should just be get to work on something right now.
Just start making things.
Start making a thing. Make as few plans as possible and just get on it. Because until you've prototyped many, many times and made lots of little things, tested out mechanics, tried lots of programs. Because if all you've done is gotten through tutorials, that means basically you don't know how to implement any of your ideas yet.
Mm-hmm. You can do what you're told.
You can do what you're told. And so who gives a fuck about like the game idea you have? Just go make something walk, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So then ask, okay, how do I make that interesting?
No,
so
let me
make a game where something walks, right? And then once you have that, now add some functionality, make it more interesting.
Boom, Infinite Runner.
Then, yep. Infinite Runner. And then realize that the thing you made is now so convoluted and terrible because you didn't know what you were doing.
Which is fine. That's the expectation.
The goal was to do it, not to have it. Then now throw it away and start over, because that thing that you made, it's not commercially viable. It's so messy you can't fix it.
It's a mm-hmm. sketch.
It's
like an artist's sketch.
I do think there is a really hard thing early on, which is finding what to do exactly.
Uh-huh.
But I think the important thing to understand is that you need to put as many constraints on yourself as possible, because we talked about it with regard to creativity, is that creativity is very much like sort of an amorphous thing, and until you just strap like a rocket thruster on it, then it can't push you in any direction because it's just like this cloud of crap. Yep. So
you got to compress that cloud and put a nozzle on it.
But exactly. I think this is mostly because people overvalue ideas, you know, because it's like, wouldn't it be cool if, and then your things expand on all the potential things mm-hmm. that could happen.
Well, I think it's partially true. I think it's also when you're first starting out, there's the question of how do I make good use of my time?
Yeah.
And like I have experience with trying to draw in my off time, because there's the question of like, okay, yeah, I want to draw. What do I draw? Mm-hmm. Like what? That's the big perennial question. Like, okay.
Because the problem is, since if you don't know how to draw, you don't know what things you would need to draw to learn the things you need to know, you don't know.
But the important thing is actually that it doesn't matter. You just need to just have things that let you answer that question without having to think about it. So mm-hmm. there's no barrier.
Yep.
So Tifa, for example, brought in these little slips of paper. So we would just go sit outside and you just take two slips of paper out and it says like cucumber chest. And then you got to draw. That's what you're drawing now. Like it solves the problem completely. And that's why game jam
is so great.
Exactly. Game jams do the exact same thing.
Get to work.
You don't have to think about that particular part, because that part doesn't really matter that much.
And I would say, so the question is, as far as constraints go, if you're first starting out, this is the drawing problem. Mm-hmm. You don't know enough about games to know even what is an appropriate constraint or what would count as a constraint versus not.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had our game dev course, we put a very tight set of constraints on our students for the first half of the semester, which we then lifted those constraints later in the semester. A lot of people just went crazy and totally flew off the rails and blew their projects way out of scope and then crashed and burned and couldn't mm-hmm. actually finish making the idea that they wanted to make. And so the types of constraints that we used were things like no art, and instead keep it to just simple shapes and colors mm-hmm. and try to convey ideas through the use of shape, color, and sound.
Which is art, but you just mean no...
No animation, no hand-drawn, mm-hmm. you know, stuff.
Yep.
Because...
It's like primitives shapes. With good color.
Yeah, because the idea there is people... You need to train yourself as a game designer to understand how people place their consciousness into the thing that they're interacting with. And so... Think about in early Mario, you know, Mario's face was so pixelated that they had to give him a mustache so you could tell that it was a face. Mm-hmm. Like that was how crappy the art fidelity was. But by drawing a picture of Mario on the box art, then that tells players, hey, this thing that you just like weird blob of pixels you're playing as, that's that same character that we drew on the box. And people just put that idea into there. And so the argument to take that one step further is, what if Mario wasn't a picture of Mario in those pixels, but was just a rectangle and they just called it Mario, mm-hmm. right? Well, people would still be like, yeah, that thing on the box, that's what I am. That's what this right. rectangle is. And so you need to learn how to convey ideas.
Actually, in old Atari games are basically that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you need to learn how to convey ideas in the simplest way possible. And once you start throwing art on top of there, then that serves to kind of distract you from your core purpose as an early game developer, which is to learn how to implement these mechanics, how to make them fun, how to convey ideas to players in ways that they can understand.
Well, I think also until you've done it, you just have no, you're not ready. You don't understand just the degree of complexity that each of these things introduces, because the moment you introduce, you know, a character that has a head and a body, and not even legs, but just even a head and a body, right? Then you're like, okay, now, and then you look at it, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this feels terrible because it's just a thing that sits there.
Now it's just a flat static picture.
Exactly. So now it needs to blink. So now I got to figure out how to make it blink but it can't blink on a timer.
It needs to blink sort of randomly.
It's got to be random. So now you have to understand how to make it blink randomly. And then, but that means now it's like its head's going to change. So now anything you had to do that might change what its head does, you have to make sure that works for blinking. Mm-hmm. And then also, right.
if you have a 10 frame run cycle, but then it also blinks
during the cycle,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now you got to detach its head from its body, render that as a separate sprite, mm-hmm. have a different blink sprite.
And now you got to start worrying about draw order and stuff. Yeah, and now also,
this is
an
art problem.
This is just because you decided you wanted your character to look different.
So, right? So a good set of constraints are essentially these primitive shapes and colors for your art. The other ones we used were place your character, your player as a character in the world. So no strategy, no simulation, no you're an overlord commanding a deck of minions or whatever else. Your character is in the world. So for example, it's a square.
You're a spaceship. You're a you're a
space square.
A person running around. Right. You're a
square person running around.
A squareson.
And then no more than four inputs seem to be a good one. So in other words, don't overdo it on the buttons and stuff. And one action that the player can do, and then some... At least one action. And then, so for example, shoot or jump or teleport 3 feet. And then the critical one, once you have the action figured out, is a suite of obstacles that the player has to use their action to overcome.
Yep.
That's it.
And I would also say, as you start doing this stuff, focus on finishing. Decide what finishing means, right? Because you're still making prototypes. They're not supposed to be commercially viable, but... But ask yourself, as you start to see the thing take shape, ask, okay, what would it look like for this to be done? And then actually do it until it's done. Because I think the biggest difficulty, it seems to me, kind of watching other, you know, hobbyists trying to become full-time developers from the outside, seems to be the inability to finish a thing that they start. Mm-hmm. Because at the start, it's all this very exciting exploration phase where you're learning how the thing is going to look and it starts to take shape. And then once you kind of see what it's going to be like, then you decide, oh, maybe I'm not that interested in this anymore. Or, oh, I want to try this other idea I have. And then you just leave it. And if you never actually, so being able to finish a thing is just a skill you have to develop. It's, you have to push through a lot of mental barriers to actually complete a thing, especially a prototype. And if you start that at the very beginning, then there's nothing that's going to stop you once you start making full on professional stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the things.
Cool.
Focus on finishing, use those constraints, simple action games.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that well, then you'll start to see the patterns that allow you to do bigger things.
Yep. So, and then just produce.
Yep. Just keep at it.
Work a lot.
It's just like anything. It's like learning a program, like playing a guitar, whatever. You just got to do it a shitload. Mm-hmm. And eventually you'll figure it out. All right. So I think that's all the time we have for this week's Coffee with Butterscotch. We'd like to thank our studio wrangler, Monique, for putting this episode together. Our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. And the Beescotch dev team, Andy, Tifa, and Shur, for continuing to jam in the other room while we're over here doing whatever this is. We also like to thank our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. And of course, we'd like to thank all of our listeners for coming back every week. And if you want to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can always hop into our Discord at bit.ly/BSDiscord. Come say hello. We're in there. There's like 140,000 people in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was yesterday. Today there were 140 million.
Yeah, it's really ramping up.
We got some real good growth.
Pretty soon, we're actually going to, it's sort of a, it's like a pyramid scheme. You know, if you bring 10 people in the Discord, great things will follow. So it's really grown. It's really, really going well. Also, we don't advertise this show. So we depend completely on word of mouth and good reviews. So if you want to help us grow, then tell your friends, tell everybody you know, and then hop on to iTunes. Give us some stars. We appreciate it. All right, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.